morning, Lexington. Welcome to Bluegrass Bios on WLXL LPFM Lexington Community Radio. We are broadcasting, as always, from STEAM Academy in North Lexington. In studio this morning is myself, Kyle Bigelow. No nicknames. I didn't think of any. And Benjamin, the Benjineer Wolf. That one's solid.
Yeah, that one's sticking.
That is etched in concrete. Our guests today are, once again, the ladies of the Kentucky Refugee Ministries, or KRM. They're going to do one more follow-up with us to talk about the refugee community and a couple of events that they've got going on both this week and next. Then in the second hour, we'll have Spencer Mansilis. I think I'm pronouncing that right. He's a lawyer for the Kentucky Equal Justice Center. I think I say every week. I wonder if I'm pronouncing that right. That's really poor journalism.
Kyle, am I saying that right? Kyle?
Figure out pronunciations. Sitting in with us is our good friend of the show and a special co-host, Dr. Alex Estrada. He'll be in for the entire second hour to keep us relatively entertained.
Good.
If you're interested, you can tweet the show at Bluegrass Bios.
Yeah.
We're going to have our guests in pretty shortly. Dana and Luella and Amantha are waiting in the wings. We've got a lot to cover with them. One thing that we would be remiss to cover, is the mass shooting in Orlando. However, Ben, I kind of want to put a pin in that.
Yeah.
2 weeks ago, we started the show on Memorial Day and talked about death.
Yes.
Then last week, we started the show with Muhammad Ali.
And talked about death. Oh, death, yeah.
Those were under a little bit different microscope. Obviously, information is still coming out about the 49 dead. Ben, if it's all right with you, I'd really like to tackle the meat of this when Alex comes in.
Yeah, definitely.
Put him through his paces. In the meantime, the floor is open. I know you want to talk about the thing I wanted to talk about, because it's more timely, I think, is Game of Thrones.
Sure.
You're a Game of Thrones guy.
I do. It took me a little while to hop on board, I think 3 or 4 years, but then when I did, I binged.
You think
to the present.
You think we could manage to break down the episodes for the next few weeks? There's only two more coming up, but we're ramping up to the end of this sixth season. I'm an addict.
Yeah.
And
I have to watch. It's a compulsion to watch it, so I have to. And I was telling you before we went on the air, I have to consult Wikipedia before each episode because I can't remember how we got the previously on Game of Thrones isn't good enough. I've got to go back and just go, okay, what's this character's name? What was it? Where did they come from? Why are they angry at this other character?
You've got your staple characters, though, right? Like the Starks and Jon Snow. Daenerys Stormborn, who has like 15 other names, only mounting the confusion. But
so she is the breaker of chains,
mother of dragons. Yes, the unburnt,
which is what we call Alex.
Here's what I'll say to anybody out there who cares. Spoiler alert: you can turn this off for the next 5 minutes until we bring the refugee ladies on. I thought that episode was the worst that I've seen in a really long time.
Oh, this last one?
Yes.
I think it was like an A to B episode.
A to B?
Yeah. We're at point A.
Nothing happened.
We need to get to point B.
Oh, not a grade. You're saying that it was like
Yeah,
so like a filler.
Get from
kind of
point
thing.
A to point B.
Yeah.
Well, as a setup episode.
Sure. And I guess, every show's got to have those. Breaking Bad had some type of episodes.
A lot.
But I just thought that it was not even just that it was a setup. There were so many missed opportunities. Okay, so there were two deaths off screen that have been looked forward to. The Blackfish. And if you don't know who I'm talking about, I don't remember his name either. I know he's related to the Starks. He's a Tully. But they killed him off screen.
Did they?
It was just, yeah, some guy just walked up. He said, "Bring me the Blackfish." And it's like, no, he's dead. We killed him. It's like, all right, well, moving on then. I guess it was kind of cool that the Hound went on like his axe wielding spree.
Well, he's back. Yeah, we thought he was dead.
Even though it was a little strange how they started that episode where all the guys are around the fire and then one of them like sticks his finger up the guy's. And then the Waif, which is the name of the that assassin girl from the house of many.
Oh, okay. So she's
God
the
with
Waif.
Many faces. Yeah,
yeah, I liked her. I liked her.
Killed off screen.
Well, that one I'll forgive because it was in the dark.
That's fine.
There's nothing to show.
Okay.
They've got you on this one, Kyle. That one was going to be off screen regardless.
Man, there had to have been a way
because that was the whole blind thing. Maybe a little bit.
Even the chase scene was super like T-1000.
It was. There was a lot of jumping from like 30 feet in the air and landing on cobblestone and then just getting up and running when
I guess every
bone in your body would be shattered at that point.
All right. Well, to B episode, that's fine.
Yeah. So they had to get Arya out of the house of many faces and get back to whatever it is she wants to do now. And the world is her oyster.
This is one of the strangest shows I've ever seen. It's just
that
like,
is pretty weird.
It has
its own logic. It has its own rules.
I made a bet with my with a buddy of mine who he was sort of pressured on both sides. He's dating a girl that's very much into it, and so because misery loves company. I told him, hey, $50 for you to be able to see every single episode of Game of Thrones by the time of this, by the season finale.
Oh, okay.
So he's progressing quite well, but at some point, I mean, he's just like, when is the good guy win in any of these? It never happens. It's incredibly unsatisfying. I can't help but agree, but due to my insane personality, I must also continue.
Well, I like the world and the atmosphere and the sort of uniqueness of the show and just kind of getting drenched in that and the different climates and the different characters every week. And if nothing happens, it doesn't bother me. Because it's just kind of the journey of watching the show. If there's a huge battle and stuff blows up all over the place, which is what it looks like is going to happen next week, then that's good too. But it's just kind of being immersed in that world for a little while. So when you say it was the worst episode you've ever seen, I don't know.
It was
like a one long hour, long, 50 hour, whatever it's going to be, 80
right,
hour
well,
movie.
If you're going to be on a morphine drip when you're watching it, then I don't really know. But, but what I'm telling you is, for me, poor cinematography. Anyway, enough. We'll return to hot Game of Thrones talk next week at this time.
Sure.
For now, Ben, I'd say you've got some music.
Yeah, I have some music
ready for the ladies to walk in. I think that they're in the building, so we're gonna go to a song or two while we get settled in here, and come back with Kentucky Refugee Ministries on Bluegrass Bios. All right, we are back on Bluegrass Bios. This is WLXL LPFM Lexington Community Radio. In studio with us once again are the ladies from Kentucky Refugee Ministries, Dana Lee, Luella Pavey, and Amantha Wagner. That's me with the mispronunciation. That's bad journalism. How are you guys doing today?
Good.
Good, thank you.
All right, so Dana, you were in here with a different group a couple of weeks back, and I believe it was even on air that we scheduled for you to come back in to talk about a couple of different events. First of all, the World Refugee Day Summit, which is coming up this Thursday. Can you tell us a little bit about that?
So the World Refugee Day Summit is at the Downtown Library on Main Street, and we have partnered with a few other community organizations who have sponsored the event. And it's just going to be a series of speaker sessions on various issues facing refugees in Lexington, trauma of children and adults, how to work with the refugee community here, and then info about what does KRM do and the international situation, the international refugee crisis, and then what the United States is doing. We will have a representative who contracts with State Department, with which refugees fall under. And so she's going to give us some great knowledge about resettlement at the national level, some myths versus realities. She also used to be a director of KRM in Louisville. So she has been in the refugee game for a very long time. And there are a couple films about refugees in Lexington that will also be featured.
Okay, great. I want to be able to give you guys both the floor to talk about kind of the larger refugee issues as well as these local events. How does the World Refugee Day Summit, how does that differ from the event you've got going on next Friday, Passport to Flavor?
So the summit is more for service providers in the area and individuals who are interested to learn more about the macro scale of refugee resettlement. And our fundraiser is specifically geared towards having a fun night of culture, various tastes and smells and sights. And we plan for it to basically mock an international night market. And that is a main way for us to bring in funds for our services and programs throughout the year that we need. We receive state funding and national funding, but we also rely a lot on donations. And so the funds from ticket sales go directly towards our services.
And so there's tickets, but there's also an auction, correct?
Yes, we are having a silent auction at the event with various donated items from community vendors. So we're very excited about that.
All right. The food that's going to be served there, according to the flyer I've got in front of me, Afghani, Bhutanese, Burundian, Cuban, and Syrian. Is that correct?
Yes. So we have five different nations represented as far as food goes. And individuals from those countries are being paired with local chefs. And they have planned a set menu, collaborated recipes so that they can bring their flavors from home to us and that we can go to each of the stations and really try part of their culture. And using food as a way to bond people and get to know others from around the world.
That's Friday, June 24th from 6 to 11 p.m. For tickets, go to passporttoflavor.brownpapertickets.com or call KRM at 859-226-5661. So I'm glad that you mentioned the sort of synergy of combining these displaced people with Lexington locals. And I want to spend some time today instead of last time and even the time before that, we've talked a lot about, stuff like the vetting process, getting through the UN, immigration processes and stuff like that. But I think it's important for people to understand, why so many different communities are in Kentucky in the first place. You know what I mean? So I've got in front of me a list put out by the U.S. Office of Refugee Resettlement. This is a fiscal 2015 report of incoming refugee populations by state, Kentucky being the 10th overall, with 140 incoming refugees total last year. Now, that's a number that you want to challenge, right? I've got 140,000, but that includes 140,000, yeah. Put some zeros on the back of that. But 56,000 Cuban refugees. Now, I was under the impression that that they were exiles, but how does that? What is the difference between a an exile and a refugee for the sake of defining terms?
Well, an exile has been forced out of their country by their government, in particular. So they've been forced to seek exile within another country. Political exiles don't necessarily fall under the refugee status. You have a lot of ex-leaders of countries who then have been pushed out and will seek exile within another country, and then they cannot be sent back to their own. Cubans, on the other hand, a lot of Cubans come to the U.S. as political asylees, which is someone seeking asylum or refuge in another country. These individuals can come as refugees, or they can show up within the United States and apply for asylum once they are here. It's that wet foot, dry foot policy where a Cuban comes onto U.S. soil and they automatically can seek asylum. They can register as a parolee in Miami and then be processed out to other states and through refugee agencies. Or they can, if they have a family or friend contact, they can go directly to a state, like to Kentucky Refugee Ministries, and be a walk-in client. And we will enroll them in various social services. They can apply for jobs, and then they're given a pathway to citizenship within the U.S.
Obviously, you know, anybody who hasn't been living in a cave will understand why there would be so many, such a large displaced population from Cuba, right? Communist Castro regime, politically oppressive, and there are neighbors, but there are some other groups on here. If I can just read off the top 10 incoming, is do I say nationalities in this instance?
Yes, or nationalities.
Terminology is always. Without numbers, the top 10 incoming refugee populations for Kentucky are Cuban, Burmese, Congolese, Somali, Iraqi, Bhutanese, Syrian, Burundian, Afghani, and Sudanese. How does that compare to your understanding of the populations coming into Lexington?
So in Lexington in particular, we mostly resettle Congolese, and we have the largest population of Congolese within Kentucky. We are not resettling Somalis within Lexington. There is not a large Somali population, but many Somalis are in Louisville and in northern Kentucky. We do resettle many Iraqis and more Syrians, though Louisville's KRM is one of the top sites for Syrian resettlement so far within the U.S. We do have Cubans come in to Lexington, but nowhere near as many Cubans that go into Louisville, which our Louisville office does have its own Cuban-Haitian office, so they are much more equipped at the moment for resettlement of Cubans, but we are gearing up for more Cuban resettlement within our office as well.
How is this related to, or is this related to the normalizing of relations?
Well, you have a lot of Cubans that fear that this program will be shut down because of normalization, that Cuba will be deemed safe and stable enough, and there will be economic prosperity within the country. And so you are having greater amounts of people who are flooding into the U.S. wanting to especially meet up with their family members who are already here. So you have a lot of people who have fled to Central America and then are making their way up, which is the usual route, making their way up through Mexico and then to reach the United States, or fly in directly to the U.S. And so we are seeing some heavy intake of Cubans at the moment, and we expect that to continue until that program is most likely eventually shut down.
Dana, Luella, and Amantha of Kentucky Refugee Ministries. They're a nonprofit organization welcoming and serving displaced peoples. For more information, go to kyrm.org. Kind of continuing on this, for our audience's information, we understand so much more about the situation in Cuba due to just proximity and long history, but I was hoping maybe if I listed off a couple of different nationalities, you can explain why these communities are displaced and why they're coming to Kentucky. Okay, can I shoot them off at you?
Sure. I think it's definitely very important for people to understand why we're helping those who we are. So,
because displacement comes in all different types, right? Like, it's not just a... up in that top 10 was people displaced from Burma. First of all, a place that I think many, including myself, have to look up on a map, but sort of north of India, right?
No, that is Nepal and Bhutan. So Burma Bhutan, is okay. By Thailand.
Okay. And what's the situation in Burma?
So Burma is a crazily ethnically divided country. For an American to understand, the fact that you could be in your own state within Burma and go to the capital and not speak the language, it's just very hard to understand and believe. You have a lot of clashes with political, military, and religious clashes that go back to colonial days under the British regime and the handover of power to one specific ethnic group at the end of the colonial regime. You also have a group called the Rohingya that are in the west of the country, and the Rohingya are Muslim, which most of the country is either Christian or Buddhist, and so there have been a lot of religious clashes with the Rohingya. The Rohingyas have been deemed Bengalis because their heritage comes from Bangladesh. So there was a lot of ethnic tension between the Burmese and the Rohingya in the creation of IDP and internally displaced camps within the country, because these Rohingyas were not believed to be citizens. They're denied citizenship. You will have a lot who are trying to flee by sea, get trafficked into various forced labor because of seeking refuge on a ship as a way out of the country. You're seeing a lot of denial of rights and villages destroyed. You have the Chin and the Kachin and the Karen, who are all still in a lot of tense military tension with the Burmese government, who are many fleeing out to Indonesia or to Thailand, where they are stuck within refugee camps, not allowed to work. And then they eventually, if enrolled as a refugee and then chosen for resettlement, we do resettle various ethnicities of Burma in the U.S. And they recently had an election, and Aung San Suu Kyi's party was elected. And we're hoping for more stability and peace within the nation, and that there will be much more ethnic inclusion as we move away from this military regime within the country.
Complicated.
Very complicated.
Yeah. How about the Congo?
The Congo has been in civil war, one of the longest civil wars in actually the world, contested as the longest, a very ethnically fractioned country, exploited for its minerals and obviously leading back to harsh colonial times under the Belgian regime. You have rebel warfare that's been going on. So pockets of various rebel groups, rebel militias. So many, especially from the Eastern Congo, have fled out to various countries, including Tanzania, Kenya, South Africa, seeking refuge. And so...
Like our buddy Abraham.
Yes, like Abraham, who was on. And you have these people who have been stuck in refugee camps for for many years now, and we have been resettling Congolese in the U.S. since 2001. So that is one of our largest groups coming up specifically out of Africa as well, which is heavily allocated refugee numbers by the State Department.
So, I mean, still obviously geopolitical, you know, that you can attach the word complicated to that too, but that's, you know, civil war, I think that starts to get a little bit more, is that the more traditional situation for most, for refugees?
I would say so. You typically have people who are forced out from fear of the religious or ethnic group that they belong to, fear that those in charge of the government or maybe a militia might kill them for that, or just widespread fear from civil war, like what you're seeing in Syria and Congo. Lots of tension in Somalia. That's why camps in Kenya have been operating for 25 years now within Kenya, and you have Somalis who are stateless because they weren't born in Somalia, but they're neither given citizenship within Kenya. So that's another situation where people have fled their country due to international involvement in wars that have failed, and local militias, sometimes larger groups, when Somalia with Al-Shabaab, forcing people to flee if they do not commit themselves to their local regime.
How does the UN predict climate change will affect forced migration?
So climate change isn't currently under the refugee regime, though climate change can lead to a lot of conflict and tension within countries, especially over scarce resources. You have the head of the UNHCR and spokesperson for the UNHCR calling upon the UN and the international community to step up as far as climate migrants will go and will continue to go. You have small island nations that are disappearing, and you will not see conflict within Tuvalu, which is an example of one of these nations, but you will see by 2030, scientists predict about a meter rise of the ocean, and that will destroy most of the country, destroy crops and the livelihood for individuals. Same with Bangladesh. And so you're going to have a mass movement of people. You're going to have the question of sovereignty. Who do these people belong to? They're internally displaced. The UN is going to want to handle the climate refugee regime under a whole new sector than UNHCR, just because of funding, and you get into a lot of issues with the definition of a refugee according to the Geneva Convention.
There's a documentary you told me about regarding that climate refugees in Bangladesh titled 30 Million. Yeah, that title's based off of the number of displaced people expected from Bangladesh by 2100, the year 2100, due to rising sea levels. Okay, so bringing it back around to more the local stuff. And speaking of documentaries, there's a documentary about KRM premiering on Tuesday, is there not?
On Thursday, excuse me.
Today's Tuesday.
Yeah, so Tom Sutherland from the Public Library has been working for the past couple months on a documentary that features many of our clients and everything from arrivals to each of the services that KRM does, interviews with clients, interviews with staff. And so we're very excited for that to premiere at the summit. And then he will hopefully have a viewing after that, and maybe it will air. He is a regional Emmy Award winner, so we're very excited to see his work.
I knew Tom about 20 years ago, I think. I haven't seen him in about, 19 years. How's he doing?
He's good.
He's a good guy.
I enjoyed
hanging out with him and shooting those little stuff here and there for a while.
Yeah, he was around our office every day, so he became a very familiar face to everyone, including the clients.
All the more incentive to go, Ben.
Yeah. Now I have to say hi to Tom.
We're talking to Dana Lee, Luella Pavey, and Amantha Wagner. They all work at the Kentucky Refugee Ministries. Now, Luella, I was wondering if maybe you could tell me a little bit about some of the work that that people are doing over at KRM, as far as artistically, the handcrafted stuff that's going to be auctioned off. Maybe explain first of all what a Kentucky Kitenge T-shirt is.
Sure, I've been doing job development at KRM for about 6 years, and I'm also a community artist and do therapeutic art with refugees over the last 6 years as well, even in the after school programs. And as I do that, I've listened to them talk about what kind of work they did before they came here, you know, where they came from. I ask, what did you do for money? And so we find out as we do that, that they bring skills and abilities with them that I think it's really important to give them an opportunity to utilize. So I found out that the refugees from Nepal, they were spinning wool in the refugee camp on small spinning wheels called charkas. And so as I found out more, I found out there was someone in the community here that could make those for them. They were made in the refugee camps by him, and he made several of them. And over the last 2 years, the group of women were, we've titled them the Bhutanese Charka Circle. They have been spinning wool every week for 2 years. And it's something that they are really, really good at. And local people have watched them, people that also spin wool, but never on a charka. They'll see them doing this, and they're just amazed at their skill. And so then things such as that, like finding the abilities and the talents that refugees bring with them, we've been able to find ways to give them opportunities to use them. So another thing they've been, a few of them have been working on, we saw that one girl had just come from Africa, and she had a T-shirt on that had this beautiful fabric in the shape of the African continent. And I asked her in the hallway at KRM, where did you get this? And she said she got it in a market in Africa where she just come from. So I got the idea that I went and talked to our secretary, Nicole, at the office, and she is from Africa. And I asked her, tell me about this material that all of so many of our clients, the women come in with these beautiful, beautiful dresses.
Very colorful.
Very colorful, with all these designs and patterns, and they're very unique and eye-catching. And I asked her, tell me about this. What is this material? She told me it's called Kitenge. And we worked on that word for a little while, and I think everyone in the office is learning how to say this and learning what Kitenge is, because we asked Nicole, what makes Kitenge, Kitenge? Why is this fabric, what's specific about it? And she says, I don't know, it just is. And you just know what it is when you see it. Well, I said, well, you do, yes. So I'm going to ask you every time. So she has showed us like beautiful, beautiful materials and that are Kitenge. And we have been making designs, cutting designs out of this material that some of our tailors have brought in their scraps, and then we can cut the designs out, and then we had some people donate T-shirts, and then we found the women that were really handy with a needle and thread and really had the ability to do a clean, nice sew, and they would sew this material onto the T-shirt, and it just, we all got really excited when we first saw them. Well, since then, it's been a few months, we have about 60 that we've gotten finished, completed, of these T-shirts from about 5 women in our population right now that have been coming regularly to pick up these little T-shirts and the design so they can take them home and sew them and bring them back. And every T-shirt we sell, they receive 100% of the cost of what we sell it for. So
how are they sold?
Well, word of mouth. That's how we've been doing it so far. We put it on, Dana put it on Facebook and a few of other coworkers at Karam, and it's really spread. People love them. And so we're going to have about 60 of those for sale at Passport to Flavor. Also, the suitcases, I've thought it'd be neat to have something that when it catches your eye, it makes you think of travel. Hey, let's paint suitcases. It really is kind of a symbol for these refugees, as many of them had to flee and they could only grab maybe what could fit in one bag or one suitcase. So it's a little bit of a symbol that way for people to kind of relate it to the displaced life, you know, when you have to leave a place and you can only take what you can just carry. But these suitcases, we're making them artistic and beautiful, and having some of our clients and some of our staff paint colorful, fun designs and pictures on them. And those will be for sale at Passport to Flavor.
What do you love the most about your job?
Oh, what do I love most? There's such a hard question because I love so many things. I think what I love most is getting to know all these amazing people that come through Lexington, that come through our office, that have come from so many difficult, different places, and they bring such beautiful and amazing and sometimes heartbreaking perspectives and stories from their life. And I get to actually cross paths with them and be a part of their life just a little bit. And that has been like something that's made my life richer for sure.
You're a your position is job developer, correct?
Yeah.
What are some of the you said different people bring over different skills, right? How do you translate their skills into this society?
Oh yeah. Well, we have a job class, and so we do have to kind of help them see what it's like to work here, some of the cultural things that they'll have to be aware of. But we don't want to take anything from what they bring with them. They bring really hardworking attitudes. People come really ready to work, and that's probably the biggest attribute that employers are looking for, is people that are going to give them 100%, and that's most of our clients. And so we do some of that training, but they're very good at paying attention to what's needed and what an employer or someone is asking of them, and then doing exactly what they're told to do on the job. So employers have been very pleased with that ability that they bring, and they do work really hard.
Amantha, I know I've been ignoring you up until now, but you're sort of new to the organization, right?
I am. I've joined the team within the last month as the new communications intern under Dana, and working with her has been awesome so far, and working with these displaced people and the clients that come through KRM has been even more wonderful.
Why are you attracted to this work?
Well, I've known of KRM's work since about 2011. I'm from Louisville, and back in high school, I did a little bit of like monetary fundraising, and then moved to Wilmore, Kentucky for college, and did a winter clothes drive this past winter for the Lexington branch of KRM, and I've been talking with some of their past interns and getting to know more about what KRM does. And the more I learned about this nonprofit, the more I just felt like it was something I needed to do to come alongside with them and partner with them and work to help these really strong, independent clients that they have to be able to succeed in America, and to help give them the best tools to succeed in a new country. Maybe they don't speak the language, or maybe they don't understand some of our cultural norms, and I think KRM does the best work possible in order to assist them and give them the best chance for survival and the best chance to have a normal life again.
Dana, you've been in here enough times that I know that it's a labor of love. So so before we go out, why don't you take the floor and you tell me, same question, why is this so important to you, as it so clearly is?
I guess this work is important to me because I always learned that there's no such thing as a lesser person. That was one of our mottos with my human rights program in undergrad. And so I've always wanted to experience people of different places and different cultures. And then as I grew up, I came to learn about inequalities and conflict around the world and just always felt it was unfair. And so I feel like it is kind of like a moral responsibility, human duty to, if you have the means to give back to those that need your help. And so I enjoy, especially with the outreach side, speaking about all the great things Kentucky Refugee Ministries does, all the awesome staff and the hardworking staff and caseworkers who work around the clock, meeting clients at the airport, at their homes, taking them to appointments, helping with small emergencies. So it's just such a loving place, such a great environment to work with wonderful people. And I just absolutely love being a part of that.
Come back next week.
Always.
Well, you're always welcome. Dana Lee, Luella Pavey, Amantha Wagner, thank you guys for coming in and talking to us today.
Thank you.
Thank you.
If you want to get tickets to Passport to Flavor, go to passporttoflavor.brownpapertickets.com or call KRM at 859-226-5661. Or for more general information, go to kyrm.org. They're also all over social media. We'll be back in a few minutes with our good friend Dr. Alex Estrada and Spencer. Hang on.
Don't mess up the pronunciation.
And Spencer in the next hour. You're listening to Bluegrass Bios.